That's right, Kiss Army. You wanted the best, you got the best. I'm Matt Porter, and you're in the Kiss Room for this special feature. If you've been listening to all your favorite Kiss podcasts, and I know that you are, you've heard original Kiss crew member J.R. Smalling talking about the new book, Out on the Streets, The True Tales of Life on the Road with the Hottest Band in the Land, Kiss. J.R. chatted with Joe Polo on Podcast Rock City, Jody Havnot on Strange Ways, and Ken Mills on the Podkist, sharing some cool stories, plus the details about the new book, which is being published as an ebook and eventually a hardcover book. Out on the Streets will document the stories of the original Kiss crew, which included J.R., Peter Orakinto, Rick Munro, and Mick Campese. Unfortunately, Mick Campese passed away about a year ago. We were fortunate to chat with Mick in the Kiss Room back on November 16th, 2012. I was digging through the archives, and I pulled out this part of the interview from that show. So now, live via technology, Mick, welcome to the Kiss Room.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
See, now, this is good because we got you actually patched in on line 7. Line 3, we had some kind of problem with. Now, can you hear? I got Bob Brodsky, Frank Hagen, Chris Giordano in the room with us. Can you hear
him
now?
Chris.
Brother Mick, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Perfect. I'm great, man. Good to hear from you.
Same here. Drop me a line.
Definitely. Well, we'll catch up now in front of like all the Kiss Army.
If you want to have a personal conversation, this isn't the time to do it, because we've got 80 billion listeners. Right. So
yeah, well, who's from the Kiss Army there? Because I was the original member in Terre Haute that day, and I've never received my card. 35 years later, I'm still waiting.
Well, you know, that's an interesting story when you think about it. Now, you were there in the beginning. When we talk about Kiss Army, and this show really representing the Kiss Army. Now, last month, we had Bill Starkey himself on the line with us. How did you get started with Kiss? You were there from the beginning. How did you get started?
I was working with Premier Talent at the time, and I was working with the band Free, and they had just split up. Paul Rodgers and company started Bad Company, and the other half with Paul Kossoff started Backstreet Crawler. Well, the band Backstreet Crawler were originally from Houston, where I'm from. So we all grew up together. We were in New York working. When they decided to leave for London on this project, I was going with them, but the office told me there's this new band we're getting ready to sign, and they're looking for a Cracker Jack road crew, people with experience, because we're going to try to take this to the top. Did the interview. The very next day, went up to upstate New York, where Kiss was playing with my friends from Houston at Lamont Hall. It was a university up there, and it was to raise money for the library. And as soon as Ace plugged in and started on Deuce, I looked at Bill O'Coin and said, where do I sign? And that went perfect with your question the other day. What reminds you Kiss, or what embodies Kiss the most? And I said, agreed with Chris, Deuce, by far. That's your first introduction. Those chords that Ace hits, just the harmonics, and then the stage show just blew us away, the same way it did all of the kids who eventually went to see them. And we were no different, and that's how it all began.
See, that's now, Deuce was the one that on my Kiss Room Facebook page, that did get the most votes. People were very vocal. That was the song.
I think so. And it was great today, because when you opened your show, you started off with that, I believe.
That's why we picked it. I think everybody was getting psyched. And the one thing we said was, wow, now I feel like going to a concert. All those songs got lumped in.
It's always the song that gets you going. It always gets you going, right, Mick? I mean, no matter when they play that song, you get into it. I mean, it's time to rock when you hear that song.
Exactly. And the way the show used to be was, Strutter, Nothing to Lose, Hotter Than Hell, all back-to-back right. without them even saying a word to the audience. You were already well into your ride, your trip for the night. Mm-hmm. And Deuce, to me, embodies all that. And then my second favorite song, y'all played that second. Completely opposite, Going Blind.
You know what, that version of Going Blind, that was actually from the Australian, from the Unplugged tour, that version of it. And I like it. I brought it out of that disc because of the fact that you hear the crowd singing. Gene says about one line into it, help me. And the crowd knows every word. And I always call that the Kiss Australia Symphony Choir because they are singing it over the band. And now you wrote me a message the one day. You remember sitting playing Going Blind on the guitar with Gene on the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always one of my favorites.
Well, we were on tour. He had difficulties, riding in a hotel room. And we had to travel, so Gene would ride on the bus with us. And myself being a guitar player as well, and me not being able to sleep while buses rolling out of fear of a crash, like I'm going to be able to do something about it. But Gene would ride on the bus with us, and he and I would play. And this is when he was writing the songs for his soon-to-be solo album.
Wow.
And so a lot of those songs we worked out together, just, him telling me what to play and just feeling the mood with him and just filling in the chord structure while he was, trying to figure out the rest. So, those were the good days. Those were the good times.
Hey, Mick, Bob Brodsky here. You were on the float in Cadillac, Michigan with the band. What was that like?
Oh, it was madhouse. It was a madhouse. We were all tired. It was the end of a tour. In fact, I believe wasn't too much later than that that we took off and did our first European tour. So, Cadillac was just mayhem. Just being back in high school and seeing the mayor and the principal and everybody at the brunch that morning all in Kiss makeup. It was... it was something. I've never been that close to a policeman before.
When you're happy to see him, right?
You got a little paranoid, right?
Absolutely. Hide the Cheetos and don't turn around too much.
Hey, Mick, it's Frank Hagan. How you doing?
Hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
When you guys were thrown off tours, was there ever a backup plan? There was no backup plan.
Listen, we would be in Atlanta, Georgia, doing a gig, thinking that we had the next day off, only to find out that we had to be in Crested Butte, Colorado, or someplace. Just drive all the way there overnight. No big deal, guys. And then drive back to Savannah for the show the next night.
Oh, my God.
We never knew where we were going because, we would open up for somebody and the next day the office would be getting calls. They don't want this band on tour with us, but the real reason was we were blowing them off the stage.
Right.
And, I'll never forget the Black Sabbath tour. I mean, we were just all gung-ho, wow, we're going to go out and open for Black Sabbath. That was a big deal. The first night after our set, half the audience was gone. And this was right on the cusp of Black Sabbath making one of their best albums. I believe it was Sabotage or something like that back in around 75. And so they worked out a deal and said, we're still going to headline, we're still going to get the headliner's money, but we're going to go on first.
Wow.
To make sure the audience sees it. And I remember sitting, me and Gene on the plane sitting right across from Geezer Butler and Ozzy. And, of course, you couldn't understand a word Ozzy was saying anyway. Geezer was spot on, and he was going, we're representing the old. You guys are the new, so come on, And that's what we did.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, you just kind of take all that with a grain of salt and just do it, and prove your worth.
Hey, Mick, I just wanted to say, you know, I know you got so many great stories. I just wanted to tell everybody listening about when we met at Gene's book signing. We met, what was it, back in 2008? And yeah. I got to tell everybody what a great guy Mick Campisi is. You know, we were in line, and I remember we got to talking. And at first, I didn't recognize you. You know, you were saying about how you're like, oh, man, I was in the original crew, and I can't get to the front. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, okay, you know. And then all of a sudden, you looked out the window, and you saw Junior come in. And I looked out, and I recognized Junior. And then I realized, oh, my God, I'm standing with Mick Campisi. You know, and the next thing you know, we got really friendly, which, you know, it was a great day. And we hung out with Gene for a little bit. And you even, you know, I got to thank you again for, you know, we got to go to, we were all planning to go to Vegas that year. And right. And we all got backstage and we took some great pictures with Kiss. And, you know, I just want to thank you for that. And I wanted to ask you if you got a chance to read Peter's book. But real quick, you'll love this story. I met Peter at his book signing up in right near where he lives in Jersey.
Right.
And so, you know, I just like, you know, it's so quick. You go in, you want to make like a real quick connection with them, you know. So it just hit me at the last second. So I go walking up to him and he's got his head down in the book. And I say, hey, Peter, I said, when's the last time you heard this? And I went, Peter Chris on the drum. And the next thing you know, he literally like jumped in his seat and he looked up at me. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, that sounds exactly like Paul Stanley. Get the hell out of here.
I said, Peter, I said, we just met. I said, we just met. You want to throw me out? He said, get the hell out of here. He's like,
that was the funniest thing ever. I knew you about that one.
Did you read the book yet?
I believe it.
Did you read the book yet?
Yeah, I've read bits and pieces.
You know, I mean, it's controversial, but I mean, you would know better than anybody if, you know, what you think of the book and compared to your history, what would you, do you think it's accurate, or what's your opinion of it?
Well, I've heard tales from people that have read it, and they weren't too happy with it. Mm-hmm. They think that he ripped into a lot of people, but, you know, you had to be there. You had to live in his skin. You know?
Right.
Peter is a very insecure person, and... And Gene and Paul, as much as I love them, they, you know, they put the hammer down on him a lot. And he reacted the way he did, which was his good old Italian temper. Right. You know, you never knew what night you were going to have to separate Gene and Peter. Gene would be, you know, spitting this gobs of gook out of his mouth that Peter or anybody who was inside of him, and Peter would throw drumsticks at him.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, after that Cadillac gig, I had to separate them backstage. Peter was ready to kill Gene right then and there.
Really?
Over the timing. Gene said Peter was dragging on the time. Peter said, Gene, you're crazy. You're making all kinds of mistakes while you're out there mugging. So, you know, who's to say what? It's just the way it was.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to relate as some, you know, because like we're reading as fans, and you know, we have this fantasy of like, you know, everything was great, and these guys should just work it all out, you know. But it's like, you know, for the regular guy who's reading it, and like, you know, you read Peter complain like on the farewell tour, like, oh, I'm only making $40,000 per show, and Ace is making $50,000, and blah blah blah. Well, you know, it's like, well, what were you making in the clubs, man? You know, just you should be happy that you're back with the band. Make it work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And, you know, the whole thing about it in the beginning with Ace and Peter having to take sides, they were forced to become friends. They were forced to side with each other because the vote was always going to be, at best, 2-2. That's just the way it happened.
Right.
And, you know, that's the way it is to this day. And I don't blame Gene and Paul. I don't blame any of them for anything. But Gene and Paul, they had this dream. And it was, by God, I'm not going to let this knucklehead or that knucklehead or any knucklehead take my dream from me. So either join us or leave us. And that's when they got the other two guys, you know, that worked their way into it. But, you know, I just think it was a bunch of nonsense, egos. That's all it is. Once it became a big business, no longer about a band, it was about a brand, that's when it was time for me personally to leave.
Mick, how many years did you work for the band?
I was with them for right at 4 years. Seems like eternity. But, you know, I worked with a lot of bands. You know, I'm at 60 years old now, and I've been in music since the day I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. And, you know, I've been either playing or in management or some sort for all those years.
Now, really, you gotta think, though, they're going to put out their books. What's your craziest story that you can share with us on the air? That's what I'd like to know. And if you have to change the names to protect the innocent, hey, that's fine, too.
Well, there's so many of them, you know. It's like that old show. There's so many stories in the Naked City. I mean, it's like if you're not sitting down with someone and have an outline of it, it's chaotic. I don't know what.
So there's a lot of stories in the Naked Cities, and there's a lot of naked in the city if you listen to Gene. So you know that's, but you know we could go in any direction with that. Now with that in mind, we could go to another song that everybody kind of recommended. I know that when I was going through my list, that Nicky. I mean I don't even know what his real name is, but on Facebook it's Nicky Nickpedia or whatever. He said Strutter. And I think we're going to listen to some Strutter right now, because that's a song when we're talking about the Naked City, that we're going to go to track number one, a little bit of Strutter here on the Kiss Room on Mako Radio, where music and minds meet.
Yeah!
Yeah, we're back here in the Kiss Room. We got Sean the King running the board. And what you didn't hear is you're sitting out there during that song here in the studio. Chris the Star Child sings along, and I'll tell you, it is awesome. We got a whole show in here. Give us just a little bit for the listeners of what that might sound like if you're doing Strutter.
Well, I know a thing or two about her. I know she'll willingly make you cry.
Woo!
Yeah.
See, that's
I'm getting into it, man. I'm getting into it.
See, I'm getting you started. That's fantastic. So now you're out all the time now with these different bands. I said it last month, but everybody listening, if you're in the area, when you see one of these bands with Chris, you got to go, right? You got, because we're getting the show here live in the studio. Go see Chris. We're back on the phone with Mick. Mick, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
And we're in the studio with Frank Hagen from Kiss Mask and my Kiss buddy, Bob Brodsky. Now, we ask you for a good story. I gave you a couple minutes, 3 minutes and 30 seconds, however long that song is. And I'm thinking, okay, I know you can come up with one that doesn't incriminate anybody or... what do you think?
It's just a fun story. You know, nothing that the lawyers aren't going to be knocking on my door about. In fact, I think it was on Facebook. I was skimming through, and there was a picture about, I think, Kiss in the 70s or something like that. Any rate, it was a picture of the band getting ready to do Deuce, because their back is facing the audience. The band's facing Peter. And this was at the Florida Jam that was held on July 4th weekend of 1975, I believe. There was a pop festival. We went down there, and what they said was that the local talent was going to perform until noon, and that featured a female security force to protect the stars. And we were set to go on stage between 1 and 2 p.m. Well, obviously, Kiss stuck out like a sore thumb because the other bands on the bill were ZZ Top, Marshall Tucker Band, Charlie Daniels, all country swing or whatever they call it, and us. So we flew to New York. We flew from New York to Tampa that morning, did the show, and returned straight back to New York. That day, we decided, okay, we're off the road. let's go check out CBGB's. So we all got together, went to CBGB's. Of course, Ace stole the party. Ace was floating around like a little butterball, just trying to see who he can spawn for the evening. And any rate, he brought this girl back, and we were just sitting around talking, and one thing led to another. The end of the night was fast approaching, and I was staying at Paul's house, well, his parents' apartment. So here it is, just Paul and I camping out at his parents. They were in, I believe, Rockport, Mass on vacation. So the next morning, we're hanging out, and we go to this little drugstore on the corner of Paul Street, where this old Jewish man owned the drugstore. And he goes, "Hi, Stanley, how's your combo doing?"
How's the group?
Yeah. And I'm laughing. How are you doing? And Paul's talking to him. And, of course, they had their magazine rack. And they had Circus Magazine, Cream Magazine, all the big magazines of the period. And these kids were behind us. They were about 12, 13 years old. And Kiss was on the cover, and they were freaking out. Paul can't say a word because back then, no pictures without the makeup. And it was absolutely killing him. You know, you could just see it. He wanted to shake those kids and say, "But that's me, that's me."
That is something else. And that's really something. You got to be part of that, the whole mystique. I think that's something we talk about a lot. I know I made this comment on Chris's page the other day. I liked it better when their personal lives were mysterious. You still thought maybe Ace was from another planet, Gene was hatched, all that stuff was great. It was, you know, because now you know too much. Once we've seen Gene in those footed pajamas, man, I'll tell you what, that takes on to Harlem Magic. You know, it's when you think about that, even we talked last month with Bill Starkey, he says, "I didn't want to meet Kiss. They were kind of scary. We didn't know what they were. They loved the music, but it really was something different." And you got to be right on the inside of you know, hanging with them at a time that was really the hottest point in history.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I just think that the original crew, us four, have so much history at such an important time in the band that it just floors us that they really don't include us in anything. And my friends from Rush, I was just with them a couple of weeks ago, and they have their original crew. They still have three members of their original crew. They sent these guys through college to get their degrees. Now they work as accountants for Rush on tour. They do these different things. They took care of their people. One of them would have a drug problem. Rehab. They had to send one guy to rehab 8 times.
Wow.
But they never backed out on them. Whereas Kiss, you got caught doing anything, you're fired. No questions asked. Even though Bill O'Coin was sitting in his glass house, still, anybody got caught doing anything, you were fired. So it's just a matter of taking care of people and not taking care of your people. And, you know, we just feel kind of slighted in a way, but hey, that's life. While it was happening, it was great. It was great fun. Everybody enjoyed each other's company. We were family. We were brothers. That's all we knew was each other for almost 4 years, traveling every single day. And when you weren't traveling together, you were still on the phone. And I was reading something a few weeks ago where Paul Stanley says that he was never friends with Peter Criss. Well, I can't understand that. I was there. They roomed together for 4 years. How can you not be friends?
Right.
Yeah.
There was that one story in the book that, you know, if it's true, I mean, it was just so funny and, like, endearing. And you know that they had to be friendly when, you know, like, there was the story in the book about when they were in San Francisco and they were doing the Gay Kitchen, and Paul and Peter, you know, were making all these like specialty dishes, and it was like they were just having like fun. It was just like, you know, it was just two guys just clowning around, you know.
And whose book was that?
It was in Peter's book. Yeah, he was talking about when they were in San Francisco that they were all bored and they were at the hotel or something. And you know, because San Francisco, like, they sell, you know, we'll make, like, a gay menu and it'll be the theme of the night. And and Paul.
Lydia has a picture of that in her book.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just a crazy story, but it's so funny, you know, that like, you know, that they had it. They were young kids. They were, and they were goofing around, and it just sounds like something that a band would do, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'd be on airplanes, and Gene would get cotton balls and pull them apart and stick them in people's hair on the plane. He thought that was funny. There was a crying baby on the plane. He thought it was funny and would start yelling, "Shut that kid up!" Yeah, people didn't want to hear that. They want to have the child be as quiet as possible, just like everybody else. But you don't yell at people, "Shut your kid up!" You know, but that was just youth. And that's all it was. And Gene is a very, very funny person. He really is. And so anyway, yeah. You know, everybody was friends. Everybody was getting along great. Everything that we had set out to do was happening. It was a lot of hard work, but still. And once the lab, you know, exploded and the office went straight from band to brand, like I said, it was all business after that. All the fun had been taken away, and it became a job that you didn't want to go to.
Wow.
That's how bad, you know, it could get. But you just suck it up and go about your business and just say, tomorrow's another day. Mm. And that's what we did. And we were all, like I said, became very close. And then what happened after that is big business.
Hey, Mick, you know, when this is Frank, when Kiss really started to explode, you think that Paul and Gene took a blind eye to Ace and Peter's addiction issues as long as they were making, they were on top and making all kinds of money?
See, that
because now you hear them talk about, you know, oh, back in the day and, you know, how terrible it was.
No. It was all fun the whole entire way until success became an issue. And to me, I think that was the office. They all got swept up in the success, and the main factor for the office was to make money.
Right.
And that's, you know, the root of all evil, they say. I like to have some so I can find out, but wouldn't we all?
Right.
We know what we're headed into our 4:30 break. Mick, I want to thank you for taking time with us in the Kiss Room. Certainly, anytime you're around on one of our live shows, we'd love to have you call in and be part of our discussions. You're
very
welcome back here anytime. What we're going to do is we're going to go into a break now. We're going to go to another song here that was picked by Frank Porter, who suggested She was one of those songs that if he had to turn somebody on to Kiss, he would say She. So, Mick, thanks for sharing your early Kiss Road Crew stories with us. We're going to go to this break. It's 4:30. We'll be back in a minute on the Kiss Room, where music on Monco Radio, where music and minds meet.
Ciao, Mick.
And we're back here in the Kiss Room. We got Sean the King at the board. We got Frank Hagen. We got Bob Brodsky. And, Mick, you're still on the phone. You said you had a good story about She. What's that?
Well, I got a little trivia question for all Kiss fans, you included. You just played She. The last break where Ace goes into his lead was also the same lead that he used on the long version of the first single, I guess, Acrobat, then they changed it to the love theme from Kiss or whatever. Anyway, that lead guitar riff was used in two hit songs before Ace lifted that riff and put it in She. Does anyone know what the two songs were?
Oh. I have no idea. Somebody out there is screaming at their computer. They know the answer. Okay. Somebody's posting it on a Facebook page, or somebody knows it, but I think nobody here in the room knows it.
No.
So, Mick, you have to tell us.
Okay. Listen to the Doors album with 5-1. The lead guitar break is the exact same break that Ace uses, except he fuzzed it out.
Wow.
20 years later, another band copied it from Ace, probably not even knowing that Ace had lifted it from the Doors. Pearl Jam on Alive, the exact same riff, note for note. Listen to both songs and then listen to She.
Wow, that is something. Now, if you had to pick out of all your songs, like, what do you think is your favorite song, Mick?
Favorite Kiss song?
Yeah, favorite Kiss song.
Deuce.
So we played Deuce.
And Going Blind.
So we played him right at the start of the show. That was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, you started the show with the bang, my two favorite Kiss songs. The rocker, the one they'll be known for, Deuce, and Going Blind. Steve Cornell and Gene Simmons, one of the most beautiful songs written.
Fantastic.
So I leave you all in peace. Rock and roll. Love you guys. Speak to you soon.
Thanks a million, Mick. You can join us anytime.
Thank you.
Great talking to you, Mick.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Fantastic.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
You too.
Thanks, Mick. You too.
Okay. Ciao, guys.
Thanks, Mick.
Bye-bye.
And there you have it. That's our interview with Mick Campese, originally broadcast on November 16th, 2012, and broadcast via MontcoRadio.com. If you go to MontcoRadio.com, you can tune in live to the Kiss Room each month, plus a lot of the other programming it's on. You'll find shows that you like. If you want to hear old episodes of The Kiss Room, go to thekissroom.com. You can find the replay page. You can find a lot of past episodes via the Podkiss Network on podkiss.com or the podcast on iTunes. Thanks to Ken Mills for putting us on there. In fact, I'll turn the microphone over to Ken Mills to tell you about some of the other Kiss podcasts that are out there. Ken.
Check out these ads for the following shows. We're proud to call these guys the friends of the Podkiss Network. We are one.
That's right, Kiss Army. We're having a rock and roll party, and you are invited. Tune into the Strange Ways Kiss Podcast and hang out with your Kiss Army brothers, Jody Havnock, Clinton Harris, and D-Rock.
Hi,
join us where we celebrate and discuss the gods of thunder. Kiss! That's Strange Ways Kiss Podcast. You can find us on Facebook or Podomatic.com. We'll see you there.
Podcast Rock City.
What's up, everybody? Joe here from Podcast Rock City. Join me each and every week as I give you my opinion on all the Kiss topics and news of the week. I talk about every era of Kiss with a number of guest hosts from all your favorite Kiss podcasts. Check the show out on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, and YouTube. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Podcast Rock City, your 20-minute Kiss fix.
This is a really big moment.
Hi, I'm Cassius Morris, host of Kiss Podcast Creatures of the Net. Our show content includes current events of the hottest band in the land, exclusive interviews, and the trials and tribulations of being a Kiss fan. You can check out our show at www.creaturesofthenet.com and on Facebook or Twitter. And if you don't know the website name by now,
well, you better learn it.
We'll see you here.
Kistery Science Theater, the most civilized.
Yeah.
Oh, f-
oh, f- come on.
Respectful.
Just imagine Gene it's with like a with like a washed-up bass. Boom, 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 boom.
And serious.
No, wait.
Excuse me, Bob. You're gonna come over and do my album?
Kiss podcast on the web. Kistery Science Theater. We bust balls because we care.
Doctors define modern rock disorder as a sudden, intense drop in musical taste affecting all facets of the victim's lives and the lives of those around them. Over 20 million Americans suffer. Do you? Is your newfound love of Axe body spray, leather wristbands, and mountains of hair care products driving those close to you crazy? Has your overwhelming desire to crank Nickelback, drink a sixer of Natty Ice, and yell at girls from the back of a pickup truck seriously impaired your work or social life? The Decibel Geek Podcast offers new hope. The Decibel Geek Podcast, the only podcast proven effective for MRD. The Decibel Geek Podcast corrects the chemical imbalance created by listening to bands like Theory of a Dead Man and Three Doors Down, so that with time and your hosts Chris and Aaron's help, you can move toward recovery. MRD hurts. The Decibel Geek Podcast can help. Visit www.decibelgeek.com to begin the road to recovery.
It's time for some cheap talk. You're listening to Trick Chat.
Their mommy's all right, their daddies are all right, they just seem a little weird. They even got their Kiss records out. This is Ken from the Podkiss. Join me, Matt, Andrew, and BJ as we talk about four great guys and three great chords. Cheap Trick. If you're a Kiss fan, chances are you've checked them out. So please check out our show, Cheap Talk with Trick Chat, available for now in the Podkiss feed.
Keep cheap trickin'.
Someone, somewhere, is needing to hear from you. Someone needing to know that you care. Care enough to give the gift of Podkiss. Tell a friend about Podkiss today. Download us on iTunes, friend us on Facebook, and rock your ass out. Podkiss.